Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another Craft Beer Nation BJCP category review study session. And I am Matt Miller from Craft Beer Nation. We've got a little panel of folks here tonight, some seasoned, some rookies, and me. I probably don't fit into either of those categories. And I'm a seasoned consumer, I think, perhaps. But we're going to talk about Category 10. We're going to talk about American ales. And these have some pretty exciting subcategories. We've been talking a little bit before we started recording here about some of the things, our thoughts with regards to aging and all those kind of fun things. So we're going to get into all that detail. Before we get started, I'll tell you that we are available as a podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and our own FeedBurner feed that you can subscribe to using any one of your podcatcher programs or apps. And we've got our own channel on YouTube, so you can subscribe and follow us there. And, of course, you can just come to the craft beer community on Google+. That's where all the fun stuff happens, people posting pictures about what they're drinking and all that kind of good stuff. So find us, join us, subscribe, and hang out with us. We really enjoy it. So that's that. And I'm Matt Miller. We've got four total panelists here from Craft Beer Nation. We've got Gil Mello, Boris Castillo, Alan Huerta. And of course, our seasoned and favorite, and well, not favorite, I guess we'd like him a good bit. I don't want to make the others feel like they're lesser.
That's my favorite for this week.
We've got our loyal turnout and great guy all around, David Houseman. And we're just gonna dive in. We're just gonna dive into some of these good beers. I had a pale ale before we started here. I've still got the end of it here, and it was bottled about a year and a half ago. So that lost some of its hoppy edge, I guess, that they were holding on to. But it's still quite delicious, and it's just exactly an American pale ale. It's just exactly what I kind of go for. I like the hop. I like the aroma. I like the flavor. And sometimes an IPA can be a little bit, you know, you're turning things all the way up to 11, and sometimes that can be kind of strong. So these are going to be more subtle beers, I think, is what we're going to find. So I guess I'll just shut up here and let the smart people start talking. But where does this category come from, David? Where does the distinction of Category 10 really, where do we find that?
Oh, boy, that's a good question. I guess really these came about with the examples, more centered around what became from Sierra Nevada as an American pale ale became a classic example. You have the West Coast hoppy beers, the pale, came, you know, unique to the U.S. As a U.S. version of the English pale ales with American hops, and the propensity to maybe overdo things a little bit in adding hops. So there's a little more bitter and certainly a lot more aggressive flavor and aroma using the American hop from the West Coast. There's a lot of the amber ale, also, there's a number of examples across the country of kind of the American red ale or amber ale that probably centered around. And then the American brown ale is also sort of a classic. I'm trying to think. Suddenly I had a loss of memory as the classic example of that. Was the old what's not even listed anymore.
Of the red ale?
No, the American brown ale.
Oh, this says Bell's Best Brown, Smutty Nose, yeah. Big Sky, North Coast, Acme Brown, Brooklyn Brown Ale.
I was thinking of the Texas.
Oh,
but in any case,
Shiner?
No.
Nice try.
Yeah. But in any case, it's kind of, again, it's an American interpretation from the English brown ales. So that's where that really came from. I think the American brown ale has been somewhat muted more recently. It's not quite as hoppy, as assertive as it used to be. But hops really define the American pale ale and the American brown ale. And the American amber ale is very, very similar to the American pale ale. In fact, if you look at the specs, they overlap in gravity and IBUs very closely. The differences in malt profile and body, mouthfeel, and the flavor of caramel, crystal malt in the amber that's really generally lacking in the American Pale Ale. American Brown Ale, like all the brown ales, some chocolate, toffee, a little bit of roast maybe, but not the roast you'd have in a stout. You know, not roasted barley you have in a stout, or a black malt you'd have in a porter, really. More of chocolate malt, brown malts, caramel malts, a little bit of toast, perhaps. And so that's the malt profile of the American Brown, along with American hop aroma, flavor, and assertive bitterness.
All right. Well, I think Dave pretty much presented that, folks. Join us next time for a no. that's really a really good outline of what these are and where they come. And I definitely see that when I look at the style guidelines. You hit it right on the head, David. The gravities and the ABV on American Pale Ale and American Amber Ale are spot on the same. The American Brown Ale, very similar. So this isn't an ABV battle between these three. Right. It's that profile, you know, hoppy, and you know, the malt increases and the hops become a little more subdued as you move from the pale ale to the amber ale to the brown ale. So, I mean, that's to me. I guess there's a beer for every palate in this category.
That's right. And the American Pale Ale, you have to really look at that kind of in context with an IPA too, where IPA takes things another step up in terms of bitterness and hop aroma and flavor. So the pale ale is a little more balanced than, say, an IPA toward malt and hops. The malt in an American pale ale can be predominantly just a two-row malt, maybe a little bit of caramel or crystal, but not a lot of it. The bitterness and the malt sweetness are going to be a little more balanced than, say, in an IPA, where you get that really aggressive bitterness.
And so when it comes to...
Go ahead.
When it comes to American ales, I judged at a competition not too long ago, and I thought the cool thing, like when the judges told me to kind of separate them, he was saying, like, this is how he showed me. He, like, put up his pen or whatnot, and said, like, on this end is, like, hops, and on this end is, like, the malt character. And for the pale ale, he said, like, hops should be here, the malt should be there. For the amber, it should be essentially kind of like that. And for the brown, like, the malt character should be higher up, more above than the pit, or than the hop character. I don't know how that kind of stuck with me and worked out, anyway, I think.
A pretty good analogy, yeah. I think the... better examples of the American Brown might be a little closer to balanced than unbalanced. I mean, you certainly the malt is there, but I think a good deal of hoppy flavor, aroma, and bitterness really make that style and really differentiates it then from other beers of similar color, porters or stouts or English browns. What really distinguishes if you've got some, you know, Centennial or Cascade hops in there that you can taste and smell and really sort of the bitterness may be that balance, but I think you get a little more flavor and aroma.
Well, you know, I guess it's really hard to not turn every conversation that we have in the Craft Beer Nation into a hops battle or how hoppy can you make this kind of beer? But it definitely feels to me like the pale ale is really maturing or really becoming the next highly hopped, highly aromatic beer. I mean, there's a Boris can attest. There's a DC Brow makes a beer called The Public, and that's their American pale ale. And I mean, you open the can on that, and it just hops right up out of there. Literally and figuratively. And to me, that, you know, I mean, I'm reading right here, you know, refreshingly hoppy, yet with sufficient supporting malt. Well, a lot of these pale ales don't seem to go that way, and it almost kind of feels like in search of making an all-day IPA or one of these a sessionable IPA, they've basically just hopped up and made a full-flavored, fully hopped pale ale, dry-hopped pale ale.
Yeah.
So it seems like there's this gray area in between, and you know, if you want the bitter, you want the hops, get an IPA. If you want something that's drinkable and malty and well balanced, get a pale ale, and that doesn't seem to be the case anymore, at least in the American way.
Well, again, when you say hops, are you talking just hop bitterness, or you really have the aroma and flavor then that they may be more assertive in that, but still be a balanced bitterness.
I would definitely say that just exactly what you said there. It might the bitterness might be balanced, but the aroma and the flavor of the hops is turned way up. Well, Boris, what would you say about that? Or have you got a noisy house there?
No, I was muted. It's for, you know, pales. And when we did that score sheet, we used SMPA as the base beer, and that was the only one that scored it sub 30. But it was most likely due to our store here. You know, their practices aren't exactly top notch because most of them don't really care. Because I know a lot of the time when they get their beer delivery, it's right past work, so I actually leave work and go to lunch, and I see when the truck gets unloaded, and when I go to work an hour later, the pallets have been unloaded, and the pallets are sitting outside. And if you've seen a pallet from a distributor, it's saran wrapped with just cases upon cases, and it's sitting there for an hour. It's New Mexico. It's 90 degrees by 10 a.m. So I would blame that particular beer on that. But, yeah, a pale ale to me and a session IPA, like you were saying, I mean, it's like, it's really a pale ale if you think about it. It's just a pale ale. So, but I don't know. I like my pale ales like DC Brow's pale ale, like Mo that you were drinking earlier, like Dale's pale ale. It tends to be, it just breaks the judging standard. But it wasn't designed to be within a judging standard at the same time.
Right, you got to remember commercially, people can make all kinds of things. They're trying to differentiate themselves in a marketplace. How can they stand out? And that's fine. And they're not limited by BJCP guidelines, and we can't be responsive and try to cover everything. That's really the fun part about brewing, is you can make anything you want, session IPA or, and what does that really mean other than a lot of hop nose and flavor, right? But the lower alcohol, not the alcohol you might have. But,
let me ask you something here. We did a brown / amber night, Friday night, a few months back, and we ended the night with this huge argument among a couple of us, and it was very hard, and disagreements and agreements of amber and brown ale. Are they the same thing? Where do you draw the line? Where one is brown, one... Can you talk to that?
I don't think... partly we call it amber and brown, and those are really colors, if you would, right? So go with the flavors that they may represent. So amber, to me, represents more of the caramel color. Like the American Amber Ale has got a lot of caramel in it. And that's the differentiating flavor profile to an American Pale Ale. They can both have comparable bitterness, comparable hop flavor and aroma, but the caramel, the American Amber will have this caramel flavor and from a crystal, and that increases the body and mouth feel. So you've got maybe fuller than medium in the Amber and maybe a little less than medium in the American Pale Ale. Whereas brown, the things that typically make that color are from roasted malts. So chocolate malt is a big one. And there's different degrees of roast even with chocolate from, you know, maybe 300 degrees Lebavon up to 500. The roasted malts, whether it be Black Patent or Carafa or roasted barley, are all degrees of roast that gives you sort of this brown color. And so stopping short in American brown, stopping short of the roast you get from patent, Black Patent and roasted barley, you're left with some caramel, chocolate malt, and those are the flavors then of brown. So it's not just color, it's the flavors that you get by getting that particular color, if you would. Does that make sense?
So you're saying that the brown will have more chocolate tones, more into the...
Yes,
Well, the roast amber would be more into the caramel.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So that's the first time somebody explained in a way they could understand.
And that's why we talk about using, you know, you guys are brewers, so if you go to make, let's say you're an extract brewer, you may not be, but let's say somebody is, and you go out and you want to make a particular beer, and you go to the store and there's this, an amber malt, liquid malt extract or dried, or a dark, typically they're light, dark, and amber, right? The question then is, how did it get to be amber? You could get an amber color by using a little bit of roasted malt, or a lot more of a crystal malt. A little bit of chocolate, or a lot of crystal 40, to get the same color. There's a big flavor profile difference of those. And that's why when I recommend that when people brew with extracts, you know, you go and you get the lightest malt extract you can get, and you add your color to it, because the color you add, how dark you make it, really you're aiming for a flavor profile more than anything else. Whether you want to add crystal 60 or crystal 40 or chocolate or whatever it is to get it darker, then you're matching the flavor to the style. Don't go buy amber malt because you don't know how they got it to be amber. It could have been in the, you know, caramelized in a kettle for 4 hours. Probably wasn't.
I have to try a couple more ambers because to me, I it was always amber was the flavorless one. Brown would have a little more flavor for me. And so maybe I have to sit down and try them side by side again.
If you go find the North Coast, yeah, they're Red Seal. This is the one I drank actually while you were in Raleigh, but that one was, I thought that was fantastic.
Red Seal, yep.
Yeah, so Muddy Nose has a nice brown ale that I like a lot. And I actually have one which is really old brown ale, which I don't think it's a brown ale anymore because they got it up to 10%. So they taste very different, and the base is the same beer, but they did something there too.
Well, and like a lot of the styles now, the big thing that's in is imperial. So you get, you know, imperial IPAs, you get imperial browns. That's where you end up with a 10% brown ale.
Yeah, Tommy Knocker makes an imperial nut brown that I get every fall.
Right.
Tommy Knocker, you mean? Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah. What did I say? Yeah, Tommy Knocker.
I just didn't hear.
Yeah. You know, we talk about taste and how we're all different because, you know, I like a pale ale that delivers the hops, the public or the, you know, the bigger pale ales, and I like an American amber ale that just does not. I like an American amber ale for being average, because there are times when you want, you know, when you want that. And I think I shouldn't have set it up this way, but Breckenridge makes an amber ale called Avalanche, and that's That's one that I keep in the fridge all the time because I like it. It tastes good. There's that malty taste to it. But I know I can pull one of those out of the fridge when I've got non-beer drinking people at the house. That, oh, we're here at the beer guy's house. What do you have? You know, so I don't know. I like having, those are like clubs in the bag, I guess. You know, I like to have different clubs.
That's right. That's right.
And a brown ale is definitely, those, you definitely can find many uses for those when people want something to drink, so.
And what food are you going to have with those? That's another, if you have a bunch around and you pick something that goes, you know, it's like picking a bottle of wine with the meal, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and really, an amber ale and a brown ale will go with just about anything you put on the table, I find. I mean, you know, if I'm going to have something spicy, I usually, or well spiced, let's say, I usually go for the hop. I want the hop to accentuate that.
Yep.
But the brown ale and the amber ale, they tend to, you know, there's a sweetness to them that go with just about anything.
I always say, in doubt, just get a pale ale. That's the white wine from the beer.
Yeah,
it's going to be an IPA.
Pretty much everything.
Everyone loves IPAs.
Yeah, I will say though that there is not much on this earth better than a steak with like a Belgian triple or a Belgian double. Man, just that.
Oh, the double. There you go.
Now. Yeah. So there's just something about that that just goes so well.
It's the melanoitins. It's the flavor, the things that make a double that. The roast, the caramel flavors and that go with the meat, because meat is cooked the same way, right? It's the that whether it's fried in the pan or on the grill, you're forming the similar compounds. So that's a complementary beer.
Yeah.
Some beers are best if they're kind of the opposites.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I guess that would be, yeah, it would definitely
was common. You have to be careful in a very hot day. If you get a spicy meat and heavy beer and a very humid hot day, you're going to look like, you know, those guys who just came out of a masonry or something. It's like sweating all over. It can be pretty tough, too.
But I can
on those days.
I can sweat like that drinking a Goza in an igloo. I really can. So, you know, I just...
Yeah, that's when you whip out the Saison right there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, wait.
Or this. I mean,
yeah.
This is off style. I'm off style today, but this is excellent. I went for six of those in no time.
That is a nice little summer beer. But I think I used to think...
Oh, if you're listening, that's a hell or high watermelon, 21st Amendment. I realize it.
Yeah, that's a pretty good seller for them. So that's the only watermelon beer that really tastes like watermelon for me. I guess I really haven't had many other watermelon beers, but it tastes pretty good. But I mean, what haven't we covered here yet in the American ales? As far as, you know, we've talked about, you know, the BJCP, you know, the guidelines kind of stand for themselves. We've talked about where they subcategories fall into them. One of the things that kind of struck me as we talked here is I wouldn't mind a little sideshow episode at some point where we talk about malt, and then maybe even one later in the year where we talk about hops, because, you know, David made some really good points there about, you know, okay, so you want 10 to 17 SRM for an amber, but you can get there a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. So there's some, you know, just because your color falls down on the scale the right way doesn't mean that it's going to give you the flavor profile that meets what those expectations are. So I definitely am one of those people that I'm a statistics kind of guy. And if someone hands me an SRM, a beer in that category with the IBU, with the gravities and everything, okay, that's, you've got close enough, but there seems to be a lot more that goes with that.
Right.
And I guess that's where judging experience comes in.
And by the way, just, you know, the complicated a little bit, but it's an interesting thing. SRM is kind of a measure of darkness, of opacity of liquid at a particular distance through the beer. But besides SRM, there's hue. So you can have the same SRM and have something with a yellow hue to a redder hue. And you can get that color, SRM, with different malts, but if you want it to be redder, use a higher degree level bond malt or grain. So a little roasted barley, just a little, will give you a real red color. And if you use it below kind of the threat flavor profile of the malt or the roasted barley, then you don't really taste it, but you can get that red color. Whereas if you use the Crystal 20, Crystal 30, you're going to have a yellower hue, but both can be the same SRM. So there is a lot of art and science to creating recipes. And I think that's kind of a fun part, is picking out what you want to make and then trying to maybe reverse engineer something you want to clone, you know? How do you get there from here?
To me, malts are like the body and soul of a beer. Hops are the, you know, the emotions that you can bring into the beer.
You can get
a really good beer with very little hop, but you're hardly gonna get a good beer if you have no malts. You know, you can't have hops around.
I like that, Gil.
Yeah.
So Alan, you just took the test. What styles were the six beers you did there?
Yeah, light American lager, like 1A.
Okay.
Traditional Bock, 5B. American Pale Ale, actually. 10A.
Okay, that's what I was hoping we'd get to, yes.
Then there was, what were the last three? Well, Triple, Old Ale, and what was before you, Old Ale? Oh, it was milk stout, or sweet stout, rather.
Okay, so tell us about the pale ale you had then.
Okay, well, so the pale ale I thought was pretty good, which, I mean, I guess I had a question, too, about the scoring on it, but, it had a nice, like, firm bitterness, had, like, some sweet malt flavor with it, and then, like, it had a little bit of citrusy character flavor, but it had no aroma, no hop aroma at all. So, I mean, it was really good. Like, there were no flaws or anything like that. So I gave it like a 32, but I was wondering, like, because it had no hop aroma, I was wondering if I should score it lower than that.
So take the aroma. So there's 12 points on aroma, 10 points on aroma. So how did you score that? That says 12 points on aroma then.
For the aroma, I want to say, I'm trying to think back to it, but I want to say I gave it like a 6, and I wrote, because it had like a nice, it had clean malt flavor to it, or aroma to it rather, and it had some like light esters, but it just did not, like no hop aroma at all. So I didn't know, there was literally none. I don't know what they did.
So here's the, in judging, different people would judge this different ways. Some might say, I'm going to start at the top of the 12, and I'll start taking things away. Well, mm-hmm. Your malt was right. The potentially alcohol level was okay in that. It wasn't.
Mm-hmm. That was
okay. Mm-hmm. The esters were okay. You didn't have, maybe you didn't have diacetyl or DMS or other off flavors, right?
Nothing I could pick up there, no.
So the only thing really off on it was low hop aroma.
Yeah.
Compared to what you thought what it should be, right?
Yes.
So 6 is like right in the middle. It's sort of average, not good, not bad. Which seemed to me you might have scored that just a little low there.
Okay.
But it is the whole thing and how it comes together. So you can't really.
With the pillow, I was thinking the hop aroma is kind of key to that style. But I mean, everything else came together. That was the only thing I thought was missing. So I mean, I can see how maybe a little low, but I just didn't know where to exactly put that because I thought that was like a for a style, a big part of it,
Right. No, I mean, that may be fine. You're going to be compared to how somebody else did, and even on that score sheet, that's only a small part of the total score. So, you know, it's not a bad thing at all. But it's really the thought process behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And then for appearance?
It was, I think I'd give it a 3. It was like perfectly clear, like, had like a, it was like a light amber, like, kind of like a light amber color to it, and just, like, a nice, even had, like, a beautiful head on it. It was,
okay.
I don't know. It was, like, honestly, I thought it was, like, really close to just pretty much reading the guidelines going, like, when I was scoring it. But just the aroma just didn't work at all, or it wasn't there at all.
And then flavors, what did you get?
Think about, like, whatever. I remember it was citrusy. I want to kind of say I had, like, a little grapefruit rind, but I don't remember. I'm trying to think of that. But it was, you know, just, like, that nice citrusy character. There was some, like, sweetness, just, like, malt. Like, it was a clean, like, malt sweetness. It wasn't, like, a whole bunch of, like, nutty characters or anything like that. There was, like, the bitterness was pretty firm on it. It was nice there. And, like, I didn't think it was overly bitter or anything. Like, it was pretty, like, for the style, that was really good.
Okay. You call what you scored that?
For the flavor?
Yeah.
I can't, but I'm sure I scored it pretty high there.
Well, that's okay.
Like, I'm sure close to 15, if not. Like, it was pretty, like, it was, that one was, I thought it was really good. Like, I thought it was probably, like, the one of the best ones that was in the whole flight.
So, another little hint, a couple hints in judging that I found. One is, like, you could start in the middle of, for aroma at 6,
mm-hmm.
and say, all right, if it's really got bad faults, you might go down from that. As it gets progressively more to style, more particularly the ethereal things that aren't really quantifiable, as they get, that's where you get closer and closer to the top scores, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just, man, this is really just smells great. And you get closer to a 10 or 11 or 12. So the other thing to look at is kind of percentages. Particularly in flavor, I look at it and say, you know, is this a 70% beer, an 80%, 90%? What is the score that's relative to that? There's one way to just think about it.
Yeah.
Because I've come in low before, and I said, you know, this is like as good as an 80%. That's what I would expect a B, you know, maybe would be or whatever. And then I said, all right, 80% of 20 is, what's 16, I think. I got my math right there. And I've had to boost the score up because I think I was too low.
So that makes sense.
So there's just different ways of looking at it. Some people start at the top. They say, okay, it's a perfect beer until I start tasting it, and then I start knocking off things. Hopefully we would arrive at the same final result, just in different directions.
Yeah. So, I think if I go down it, I should probably use a calculator before I totally mess this up. But we'll say I give it 6 in aroma, 3 for appearance. I'll just type in 15 because that sounds about right for flavor. I remember giving it 4 for mouthfeel, and then I think I gave it 7. Okay, that came up a little higher, so I messed up somewhere. But it was something like that. Like, it came across fairly good.
Yeah. Okay.
And that was like a 36 or a 37, if I added up as you went along.
When I added it up, right now it came out 35, but I think I gave it a 32, so I probably give it somewhere lower somewhere else. But...
Or he added wrong.
I don't. Silly math.
I've done that too. But
all right. Well, I think we kind of pushed through this category pretty quick tonight. Was there anything anybody needed to add in here into the conversation before we moved on?
Or I had one question actually too.
Dive in.
Or like the I had this one amber ale at a competition, and I thought it was just awesome. It took second in category. I kind of think it should have taken first, but the other judge kind of disagreed because it had, I think they used like Nelson Savon hops in it. I mean, I'm not sure, but I got that very distinct flavor in my opinion. And it like had a really like graham crackery, like toasty, this like malt flavor to go with it. And I thought it was awesome. But I mean, he kind of thought it, I guess, interpreted the what I got as a hop flavor as maybe some oxidation or something, which I didn't get or understand. I thought it was like cooler. I thought it was totally just different from that. And he thought he got some diacetyl, which, I mean, maybe he did, because I know that's kind of like a small, like low threshold or whatnot. But for an American amber, too, those flavors, I mean, it was an awesome beer, but I'm wondering how appropriate are they, or would they be?
Well, we shouldn't limit ourselves to some of these only being one or two hop varieties. There's a lot of really neat new hops. I think sometimes things don't go together well, and that's where you really have to be careful. Beers, to me, that have a little diacetyl don't go well with citrusy hops. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, butter and oranges or something. It doesn't work to me. Simcoe, I really like that hop in some beers, but you mix that with some esters, and I just, you know, to me, it just doesn't work. So I would say there'd be nothing wrong if it was blended well and balanced. There's nothing wrong with having that hop in that beer. It may be a little unusual, but there's nothing wrong with it. And you got to have to look at the overall balance of things sometimes. It's not always by the numbers and by the specs. A lot of times, the most drinkable beer may not be quite the specs.
So, Alan, were you asking a question, or were you just trying to validate that you were right and that other judge was wrong?
That was my same thought.
Whatever.
The one thing about pale ale is it seems to me that you see more and more hoppy beers and less pale ales. It's crazy how just this nutty thing about hoppy beer and.
But you know we keep buying them though, right? So that's true. I mean, what?
Well, we buy because we like them. But.
In February we get crazy, Gil and I specifically, about Nugget Nectar. And that's, you know, what do they call that? Imperial amber or an imperial red?
Yeah, it's their amber. It's so their amber beer that they just hop the heck out of their amber.
So they take a style, at least they take the name of a style that's known for multi balance.
Well, the base beer is an amber. It's an amber that they produce, and then
they crank that malt up, and then they crank the hops up, and they make something delicious. I mean, don't get me wrong, that's one of the beers that seasonals I really look forward to. But it seems like that's just kind of the way Americans and the way craft beer is going right now is don't make me four sessionable, drinkable ales. Make me something that I can taste and that I will remember after I drink it. So, I don't know. I've been in...
All marketing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and you know, I've been into little microbreweries or nanobreweries here in Virginia, and their tap line is just fine. You know, there wasn't anything off flavored there, but there wasn't anything strongly flavored either. And I think perhaps our palates just grow accustomed, or they start to desire the bigger flavors of the more strongly hopped or the more strongly bittered beers.
Yeah. So before we go, I'll just like. If you go and you Alan taking the test for taking his exam and he got an American Pale Ale, and it sounds like he understood that style fairly well and did okay in it. That's good. When you're judging things like American Brown, you do want to kind of differentiate. It may be a very drinkable beer, but do differentiate. Is it really the right malt profile for a brown ale compared to other alternatives like porters and stouts, you know, that have more roasted character? Or is it too caramelly sweet for overuse of caramel instead of chocolate malt. So those are the kind of things that differentiate that. And the amber is really using the crystal malts to give you that caramel note, a little bit fuller mouthfeel that differentiates it from the American Pale Ale, right? And the American Pale Ale is going to be a little lighter body, crisper. The hops really calls it the pop. But you don't get the kind of sweet caramel from a lot of crystal. It may have little for color, but not a lot. And that's really those three styles. But think of them also in terms of other things that they're not, because if people push the limits on American Pale Ales, it becomes an IPA almost, right? And that becomes then the fine point of two drinkable beers. Is this one really to style, or is it a little bit too big or too small or too roasty or too sweet or whatever for that particular style?
And that's really where the guidelines come in handy, is besides all that stuff, the listing of the styles, the commercial examples of the beers in a list really helps me. Oh, I've had that one. Oh, okay, now I see where, you know, something to score to, something to get close to.
Yeah, as you go, for me particularly, it's the connection between aroma and flavor has changed so much. You know, I can get the aroma and you create expectations and you kind of start learning what the flavor's going to do. And that's one thing that I think was very important for me on the learning curve about trying new beers and things like that.
And don't be swayed by the marketing. I mean, people can call anything they want. You taste it and you figure it out. You know, if you go into a brew pub and order an IPA and it's more like an amber because they didn't really use enough hops, that they may be calling it that, but you know, it didn't meet your expectations, and send it back.
And then I guess the other side of that coin is, David, is that Six Point in Brooklyn. We drink a lot of the Six Point stuff here on the show, or at least us East Coasters do. And they specifically don't put descriptions or names of the beer or what it's supposed to be on the can. They want you to drink it and decide. And that frustrates me because I'd like to know what I'm getting, at least a frame of reference of what I'm getting before I invest in it. So.
And I think that you're right, because we're judging to objective standards. And something like Six Point, it's more subjective. Do you like it or not like it?
Right. And that's what they want you to buy it based on. And
that's different than judging, though. Yeah. That's the only thing to recognize. Because if you went... And by the way, some of the competitions early on, before the BJCP, what really formed the BJCP was some early homebrew competitions. People went and they judged things on what they liked. And there were a lot of personal preferences. And the problem with that is that contest, but you can't compare apples to apples then. And particularly with judges, that's not really fair either. So by coming up with objective standards that you're judging to, it tries to make the whole process more fair and to all people involved, the entrants and the judges.
Well, I think we're teetering on the edge of having a technical breakdown. Now we lost. I don't know about everybody else, but I lost a little audio on David on his last spiel there. But I think the gist came through. But I think we probably ought to call this a night, because we had a little fun getting started tonight as well too. But I think we pushed through this. I think we shed some light on Category 10, which is you know, American ales here, with the differences in the tasting notes and the expectations of the American pale, amber, and brown ales. So that leads us to 2 weeks from now, or I think that's what the schedule is. 2 weeks from now, we're going to do Category 11, which is English brown ales. And I'm really, you know, I guess I say this at the end of every show, I'm really excited about the next session. And I find myself being really excited about it because there's so much to learn here and there's such good information coming from this group. So I'm really excited about that. And we'll be back in 2 more weeks. And if there's anything else anybody here wants to add, I'll stop talking for a second. And everybody's all shaking their heads. And that means, you know, tune in and find us. We're Craft Beer Nation. We're on craftbeernation.org is our website. Subscribe on our YouTube channel, Stitcher, iTunes, podcatcher of your flavor, and join us and hang out with us and be our friend in the craft beer community on Google+. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you all again in the next episode. Cheers.
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 Cheers. Cheers.